Good morning. I'm so happy to be here, as I always am. So, a month ago, it seemed to me a pretty sure bet. We were in the middle of a 10-day weekend from school and work and stuff. It seemed a good bet that coming from the cold would be a good topic still. But maybe coming from the wet? I don't know. But anyway, when you heard the title, I'm betting that maybe, I hope, Joni Mitchell played in the back of your mind. And that's good. That's the direction I want to take here. I'm thinking of the song Coming from the Cold from her 1991 album, Night Ride Home. And the line that's repeated over and over again, all we ever wanted was to come in from the cold. All I ever wanted, all they ever wanted, all we ever wanted was to come in from the cold. Assuming that that's true, and I think that is on some level true of almost all, it may be all, warm-blooded creatures. It's true, we all want to come in from the cold. How ought we to act as spiritual beings? How ought our religious communities to function? What does it mean to extend hospitality? And what is the religious context of being a welcoming people? What does it mean to be welcoming? And I should point out, I noticed, I'm sure it's been there all along, but your order of service on the front, it says you're an official UUA welcoming congregation. That's a specific form of welcoming, which is so important. And that's about welcoming people regardless of sexual orientation and gender identity. And that's huge. I'm talking about an even bigger sort of welcome here today. And I've chosen the word hospitality because it's a very sort of practical word. I'm not really talking, though, about the logistics. I'm not talking about the hospitality of setting up the chairs and brewing the coffee, although I think that is so important, and there's probably another sermon there somewhere. But those things, setting up the chairs, making the coffee, saying hello, putting out the name tags, they're so important, and the people who do them are just crucial to the functioning of community. But I'm talking here more generally about extending a welcome, standing at the door and saying, come in. It's cold out there, it's wet, it's raining, come in. Come and be with this people. We are all both welcomers and welcomed, I think, at different points, at different times, in different contexts. And I think those roles of welcoming and being welcomed extend to everyone. This is just our first principle, right? The inherent worth and dignity of all people. And when I'm talking about cold and warmth, you know, come in from the cold, come be in this warm space, I'm talking about possibly a lot of things. I decided to say I'm talking most about safety and freedom. And then I decided, well, safety's really tricky because you can't actually promise people safety. Safety's a tenuous, it's something everybody deserves and everybody wants, but it's unpredictable and we can't guarantee it. And it's a kind of freedom, I'm gonna say, for the purposes here. And when we talk about freedom, I think we tend to think of freedom from specific things. And there's a really long list of things people ought to be free of, for sure. But I want to suggest that there's freedom from, and there is always, if we're talking about real freedom, we need to think about freedom for what. So if we're trying to build a community that is a space into which to welcome people, and we aspire to be free from things like oppression, and disrespect, isolation, judgment, threat of physical harm or emotional harm or other kinds of harm. We also need to be a community that says, so if we're going to be free of these things, why? Why does that matter? What can we do with that freedom from? For what are we free? And I think our principles point us in a lot of those directions. And I think, too, it's slightly different for different people. It's different at different moments in time. But we aspire, as Unitarian Universalists, to be a community that is free for openness, for curiosity, for justice-making, for connection, for service, for life, for love. So welcome, hospitality, is a really big it's a big open kind of thing. And by the way, the baby noises are welcome in this sanctuary too. they don't bother anybody as much as they bother the parents, I think, usually. So just be relaxed. And it's happy to have happy noises here. I noticed he was saying every time we sang. I think sometimes that Unitarian Universalism is a distinctively hospitable tradition when we are at our best. So last month I preached a sermon about the Edict of Torta, which happened way back in the 16th century, is an edict of toleration. And that story is all about dissenters and heretics who were told in many places in Europe in the 16th century, you are not welcome here, please leave. Or a lot of times the please was left off. You know, get out. And they ended up in Transylvania, some of them, in Eastern Europe. Poland was a big place too. But the Edict of Torta was just a decision that said, in Transylvania, the people do not have to follow the religion of the king. Local congregations may choose to worship as they choose. In the story of how that edict came to be issued, you had the several main characters, and it's interesting to me to note that the three biggest characters in that story started out Roman Catholic, then became Lutheran, then became Calvinist, and finally became Unitarian. So we have at our very deep roots as a religious tradition this habit of being searchers and what are sometimes called come-outers. We come into Unitarian Universalist, many of us, out of another tradition. Often we're reacting to a sense of being unwelcome or being unfree to be who we are that brings us into Unitarian Universalism. Not always, but sometimes. And so I just wanted to invite you just for a moment to think about how and why you came into Unitarian Universalism. Was there a cold space and someone who welcomed you into somewhere warmer and freer? For some of us, I've heard a lot of Unitarian Universalists talk about growing up feeling like they asked, or being told, they asked too many questions. Some people go through unacceptable transitions in their life or in their understanding of themselves or their significant relationships, and they find themselves amongst people who don't support who they are becoming. Some people find they grow into beliefs that are simply not acceptable to the people who surround them. Some people are longing to be engaged in justice making or in conversation with like-minded others. All sorts of things bring us here. And I'm curious, we all have different stories, and maybe we'll want to talk about that later. What warmed you when you came to Unitarian Universalism? How did you know you were at home? Did you feel safer? Did you feel freer? And how can you extend that kind of welcome to other people who come to your community? The things, there's this historical tendency to be come-outers and to be people who seek for things about Unitarian Universalism that makes us hospitable. Another thing that I think makes us distinctively hospitable is our lack of dogma, is the technical word. These are things that, you know, statements that start with, we believe, fill in the blank. And we tend not to do that so much. We have a list of principles. We affirm these things. But we don't set down how we, you know, what things about the nature of reality undergird those for all of us to share. Because we each work out our own way of understanding and explaining that truth. So this theological freedom, by the way, has not been always the way it was for Unitarians and Universalists, and even Unitarian Universalists. It's been the process of long conversations over decades and centuries that brought us to this place. But at our best, this lack of dogma, this insistence that we will not impose belief structures on each other, makes us available to be hospitable with many folks who have found themselves left out in the cold by those who prefer to build community around dogma. Another thing that I think makes us a very hospitable people when we are at our best is the idea of universalism which you can understand in several ways. It is classically a rejection of the idea of hell, the idea that God is good and loving, and all of us are in this process of redemption together. So that's the classic universalism. But there's also a universalism of everything. Everything that is life, that is being, is connected to us, is part of our resources for understanding, for finding truth, and creating meaning in our world. And these are core values for us. This universalism, which I think leads pretty immediately to a sense of interconnectedness of everything. We don't, when we envision coming in out of the cold, we don't so much envision separate little warm rooms, you know, here, and you're lucky if you find one. But we're envisioning a world where the world, we aspire to help create a world where everyone can come in from the cold. We may go out. I loved the meditation. It had this sense. It was very much not come in from the cold. It was sometimes you go out and you wander alone. And that's part of the process too. You can't appreciate the warm room until you've been out. And I think even after you're in the warm room, a lot of times you need to go back out for a while. But everything in our universalist worldview is part of the experience of being human and finding meaning and creating community and knowing ourselves to be held and loved by each other. And I don't know about you, but I'm feeling a little discouraged these days, but I don't even have to ask. It's hard. There is so much coldness in the world. The world is cold in so many different ways. And I don't even want to enumerate those here. You all have the ones that resonate most with you that hit your gut when you read headlines in the newspaper. There are so many false welcomes. Social media sometimes is really as wonderful as it seems and sometimes isn't. We've talked about that before. There are so many instances of abuses of professional power, both within our own organization and I think within every realm of human community. It is a problem with human beings. Power and how we use it and abuse it is difficult for us. And there are lots of welcomes that are genuinely, the aspirations to welcome are genuine, but the reality falls short sometimes. This is part of what we're struggling with in our own association right now. There are reports that some spaces that most of us experience as warm are not so warm for some of the people in them. People who are all sorts of reasons why those rooms are not as warm. It is becoming clear to us that things are more and less welcoming to some people. They're more open to some people than they are to others. And it's hard for us to know that. Now, basically, we're learning that not everybody's alike. and that we need to learn better ways of listening to each other and discussing and asking, what makes you feel welcome? How can I help? So Joni Mitchell's song, Coming from the Cold, starts out with, I love that we sang about dancing, because it starts in a high school dance. And it starts in 1957, but I know this because I went to Catholic high school in the late 70s, early 80s, and I was never actually at a dance where anybody measured how far apart the couples were dancing. But I did hear from friends about there was a certain sister who walked around and it reminded people to leave room for the Holy Spirit. So I was still living in the culture. Joni says, back in 1957, we had to dance a foot apart. And they hawk-eyed us from the sidelines, holding their rulers without a heart. And so with just a touch of our fingers, we could make our circuitry explode. All we ever wanted was to come in from the cold. All we ever wanted. The song goes on with lots of different examples or evokes lots of different ways in which people want to come in from the cold. We want to come in. And so I wonder, what would happen if we could hold a little space in our habit of making judgments. If we could put down the ruler and engage our hearts when we're in the world, what would happen? Would there be less cold to come in from? Would there be more space to welcome people in? Joni says again, I am flesh and blood and vision. I am howling in the dark. She talks about jackals, even. She says all they ever wanted was to come in from the cold. And she says, I know we never will be perfect, never entirely clear. We get hurt and we just panic and we strike out of fear. And I think there's something to recognizing this as the human condition that can be a spiritual practice, that can be a practice that helps us build communities. And I'm going to point to our first and our seventh principles, because those are the best, right? Well, actually, I love them all, but there's the first and the seventh. There's the worth and dignity of every person, and then there's the interconnectedness of everything. Everyone and everything belongs. And to think this way requires of us some humility. And by humility, I don't mean debasement. I don't mean anything like humiliation. I don't mean feeling bad. I mean understanding who we are, how we are, what is our place in the wider world. It's about accepting the lack of perfection, the lack of completion of the project, that all the projects that are our aspirations trying to become real in the world. We Unitarian Universalists, we're working on this. How do we be a refuge from a cold, cold world? And I have some ideas. You might have another list or more things to add to the list. And one is that we dream. We dream and we desire. There's a yearning, there's a longing in us. I'm going to come back to that. But we want to be a community of warm welcome. We need to know and to cherish our freedoms. Those freedoms, a lot of those are in the seven principles that we talk about, that you recite every week. We need to practice them. We need to extend them. We need to get better at thinking about, well, if this is really what we're about as a people, what does that mean? What does that mean about how we talk to each other? What does that mean about how we do community out in the world? I'm really delighted. I see often, most weeks, on your Facebook page, somebody posts something about where part of this congregation, at least, is engaging out in the community. And I think that's really wonderful. And I think it's great that you all support each other in those projects. We need to learn how to make sure people hear us say, this is a place where we are free to value, to practice, to learn about, to seek out life and love, openness, curiosity, ways to be of service to life and love, to build justice, to create peace and connection. And we also need to practice taking refuge. I think sometimes we think of ourselves as having this special place or this oasis or this right way to think. I mean, it's really, we've got these seven principles and they're really neat. They're cool. I love them. I could talk about them forever. You've heard me go on at some length sometimes. But it's easy to think, oh, we have this and this is such a great tool. We can stand here and help everybody come into this. And that's kind of presumptuous. It assumes that other people don't have their places of warmth and refuge too. And it also, it's a temptation not to recognize our own cold places, our own experiences of genuinely needing other people to provide refuge and warmth. And this is part of being humble and being able to connect to other people, because we all share both the experiences of warmth and the experiences of needing refuge. Needing refuge and to accept it when it's offered is really hard for us, for some of us, sometimes. But I think it's so, so necessary. this whole project of being free and creating community is not about being safe and sound and permanently out of the cold. It's not about being on the upside of a, you know, the right way to live a life and have a community. And no matter what our privilege is, it's just not about being right, being perfect, being better, having something more or exemplary to which we want to invite everybody else. It's a much more tenuous, but also just more basic. It's about connecting with each other and searching for truth and building justice. And it's a thing to feel. It's hard to actually to put into words exactly what I mean. But I'm going to return to this idea of desire again. There was a point in my training as a minister where I was asked to explain. Let's see, what was the question? I was asked to comment on the theological context of my ministry with reference to a sacred text. So here's my sacred text. It's not a sacred text, but I think it is. It comes from a show I was streaming on Netflix one night in the dark, lying in bed, after I'd finished my studying for the day. And it was narrated over the end of an episode of one of my then current favorite Netflix offerings. And this episode had a plot that had some variation of the endless story about human sexual desire. Okay? Here it is. This is important, so pay attention. Before the Big Bang, before time itself, before matter, energy, velocity, there existed a single immeasurable state called yearning. This is the special force that on a day before there were days obliterated nothing into everything. It is the unseen strings tying the planets to stars. It is the maddening want we feel from the first breath to last light. Those words at that moment, it might have been because it was dark and really late, they struck me as being both cosmic and very, very deeply compassionate. The next day, I replayed the last minute of that episode over and over, as many times as it took for me to get the words all down on paper. I'm intrigued here by the idea of what we might call God or spirit or source as a single immeasurable state. I'm delighted to consider creation as the obliteration of nothing into everything. And I'm overwhelmed by the equation of those huge processes with my own human yearning. I tell people often, you've heard me say it, I'm sure, if you've been here before, more than once or twice when I've been here, that I'm a seventh principle UU. Our affirmation of the interconnected web of all existence is not just a prescriptive call, it's not just an admonishment to enjoy, cherish, and protect. I think it is deeply descriptive of reality, by which I mean not just the reality that surrounds us, but also the reality that is us and our lives, individually and together. I think we are interconnected. I don't think we ought to be. I think we are. I think those words, coming in the dark, caught my attention because they tell a story about one way that web holds me. The voice floating out of the Netflix archives into the darkness of my sleepy house that winter evening suggested that the maddening want that permeates human life from cradle to grave is the same power that obliterates nothing into everything. I don't know how to put this except to use the overworked word awesome. That is awesome that my little self and the cosmos are somehow working on the same wavelength. We're part of the same process. We're BFFs. And that's trivial and oh so not at the same time. My wants and my yearnings and my desires are somehow akin to the forces of creation. To my way of thinking, yearning is fundamentally about connection. Thich Nhat Hanh says, to be is to interbe. My young self, who struggled with the exclusion of women from the Roman Catholic priesthood, my been married 20 plus some years, self who knows that our partnership has borne many good things beyond our two children, but still sometimes yearns for deeper intimacy. And my wow, have I really lived 50-some years already self, who hopes for adventure still and wants still to find opportunities to find and serve places where my deep longing meets the world's needs. All of these once and future selves yearn to understand and honor the foundational and inescapable connections within which I live and to create new and deeper relationships. In some sense, my life's purpose, maybe your life's purpose, I think your life's purpose, you might put it somewhere, some other way, but my life's purpose has been to know the web and to do a little web spinning myself. Which sounds kind of nice, even poetic, maybe, but I haven't found it yet, not in any completely satisfying way. That yearning, I'm saying, is not going away, and I don't really expect it to go away. There are some relatively simple versions of what it means to be human and how to live more or less successfully in community floating around. You can read a lot of them online. You can subscribe to email lists and get reminders every day. But I haven't really found any of these versions completely, consistently satisfying. They're helpful some days, but some days I'm just howling in the dark. Some days all of us are howling in the dark, and all we want is to come in from the cold. Some days we're warm enough, but the day's news brings heart-rending reminders that some of us seem to be stranded beyond the warmth of human relationship. As a person who lives my life as a religious professional, I get pressed to articulate my theology sometimes, like I did in this little essay I had to write. It's part of my accreditation. If I get really pushed to articulate my theology, I'll sometimes say, with waving of arms like this, God is big. You want my theology? This is it. God's big. You might or might not like the word God. You might use all sorts of other ideas. You might scrap the idea of anything transcendent altogether, and that's fine. My point here is that whatever it is that is beyond us, that holds us here, that caused us to be here, that whatever, reality is big. One of my friends suggested that God is the equal sign in the equation E equals MC squared. I like that kind of too. But perhaps next time it comes up, I will say that God is the force that obliterates nothing into everything. These are all kind of interesting, but what I really yearn for when I get into these conversations about what is reality, what is this big thing, how do we understand it, I really want to move on to questions such as, where are you in all this bigness? Where or how do you want to be? How did you decide what to do today? How might we be together, and what might we create? What do we yearn for? What needs our attention? Which yearnings are we afraid to notice? But what might happen if we did? And how can we honor those yearnings in each other? So I leave you with a charge, an invitation. Invitation, that's friendlier. Come in from the cold and try to recognize a few of the ways in which we human beings fail each other. A couple of the ways that we leave each other out in the cold, and be on the lookout for opportunities to invite folks to come in from the cold. And also, say thanks, I will, when you are invited in yourself. Thank you, and may we be such a welcoming people.